Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, January 14th. I'm your reader, Chris Klein. Now for a brief look at Eastern Iowa weather. Today, rain and snow likely, windy, wind out of the west, 15 to 25 miles per hour. Cedar Rapids high is 36, low of 27. And on Friday, snow likely and windy, high of 30 and low of 24. Sunset tonight is at 4:59 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow at 7:32 a.m. Today's daylight hours are 9 hours and 26 minutes. Our first local headline is submitted by Michaela Ram for the Gazette. It's entitled, Not Known When Lynn Residents Can Expect Vaccines. Limited supply could slow effort for 1B population. Limited supplies of vaccines against the novel coronavirus has hampered local efforts to quickly inoculate all frontline healthcare workers, meaning it could be months before every individual in the first two phases of the vaccine distribution plan receives their doses. On Tuesday, state public health officials announced the populations that will qualify next for a vaccine, including those aged 75 and older, essential workers, and others who are most at risk for exposure to or severe illness from the virus. State officials say these populations who fall under Phase 1B of the state's vaccine distribution plan should begin receiving vaccines February 1st. However, healthcare leaders and county public health officials on Wednesday urged Linn County residents to be patient as they await news. Linn County officials say they still have not received enough doses to complete vaccination of frontline healthcare workers and others in Phase 1A, citing the current supply of COVID-19 vaccines allocated to local jurisdictions by federal officials. Vaccine supplies are arriving in our state and counties very slowly, Heather Meador, Linn County Public Health Clinical Services Supervisor, said in a news conference. Linn County Public Health has yet to be allocated enough first doses of COVID-19 vaccine to be able to offer to all Phase 1A populations in Linn County. Public Health, with the state of Iowa, have reported that Iowa currently doesn't have enough to cover the 1A population at this time. Without an increase in vaccine supplies, we will not be able to offer all individuals identified in Phase 1A and 1B immunizations as quickly as anyone would like. Linn County Public Health or local health care providers can't provide any details as to when they can expect a vaccine, as officials don't have any information on when and how many shipments of vaccine doses will arrive. Johnson County Public Health in recent weeks has seen the highest volume of calls from residents since the pandemic began, all from Iowans eager to find out when they can get a vaccine, said Sam Jarvis, community health manager. But as with its neighbor, Johnson County has not received any indication from the state when it can expect to inoculate groups within Phase 1B. We have no indication of a date, Jarvis said Monday. There's no registry or list that Iowans can put their name on to sign up for a vaccine. State and local public health officials indicated they will not be taking this approach to vaccine distribution as other states have. I wish I could give you a day or a week or a month when a vaccine will be available to you, Meador said. However, we don't have that information. In addition, Meador said, they can't provide any indication of where residents can receive a vaccine. Linn County Public Health will release those details as they become available. Residents are encouraged to sign up for updates through the county website's Notify Me tool. Notify Me. It's a tool at linncounty.org. Many health workers wait. Over the past month, the state has focused its effort on vaccinating Phase 1A populations statewide, which includes frontline healthcare workers and staff and residents at long-term care facilities. Kelly Garcia, interim director of the Iowa Department of Public Health, told state lawmakers Tuesday it would require 300,000 to 400,000 doses to complete vaccinations for phase one populations. To date, Iowa has allocated 226,000 doses, half of which goes to long-term care facilities and the other half to the healthcare workforce. There are approximately 20,000 to 30,000 licensed healthcare providers and unlicensed healthcare staff who have direct patient contact in Linn County, according to Meador. As of Monday, about 7,000 doses have been administered to healthcare workers in the county. Nearly 1,500 two-dose vaccination series were completed, Meador said. Unity Point Health Cedar Rapids has vaccinated nearly 2,700 employees as of Tuesday and has had 91% of its workers willing to get the vaccine, spokeswoman Sarah Carrizo said. About 460 have received their second dose. Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids has vaccinated more than 1,800 employees as of Wednesday, officials said. Of those, 1,021 have received their second dose. Hospital officials plan to complete vaccination of its providers and staff in the next 2 weeks, spokesman Karen Vandersanden said. Because Linn County has a large population of healthcare workers, Meador also noted it is possible that other nearby counties could move into Phase 1B sooner than Linn. According to the state coronavirus website, more than 10,000 Johnson County residents have received a dose as of Wednesday. Who falls under Phase 1B? Linn County Public Health and other local public health agencies across the state are following recommendations issued by the Iowa Infectious Disease Advisory Council, the state group tasked with setting vaccine guidelines. The advisory council announced recommendations for Iowa's latest priority group based on the current and short-term projections for vaccine allocation in Iowa. In addition to those aged 75 and older, groups included in Phase 1B for Iowa include school and child care staff, first responders, correctional facility staff and inmates, those living in congregate settings, and disabled Iowans and their caregivers. Those living in and working in congregate settings, such as workers at food, distribution, and manufacturing facilities who also live in bunk room style housing, also will be prioritized. Linn County Public Health will match employers that qualify under this criteria with an entity that can administer vaccines to employees, and it will be up to the employer and the vaccine host to determine the best method for distribution, Meador said. Local officials still are waiting for guidance from the state on how to further prioritize those groups named in the next phase, which could determine the county-level rollout. Meador said officials do know that at least 50% of the allocation needs to be held for those aged 75 and older, as well as those of all ages with underlying medical conditions. About 100 providers in Linn County, including clinics and retail pharmacies, have signed up to administer the COVID-19 vaccine to residents when supplies do become widely available. Delays in vaccinating our community are due to vaccine supplies, not the willingness or ability of our providers to give vaccines, Meador said. Also, front page article written by Grace King of the Gazette is called "Some Kids Sign On, Others Sign Out for Snow Days. Cedar Rapids College Community to Mostly Keep Tradition." Although Iowa school districts have the option of moving to virtual learning on days that snow or cold keeps kids home, some are choosing instead to keep the snow day tradition. As part of the COVID-19 response, the state is allowing the temporary use of online learning during snow days, so in-person learning does not need to be made up because of weather-related cancellations. The Cedar Rapids Community School District will not convert to online learning on snow days. While all students in the Cedar Rapids schools have been issued devices, some students may not have access to the internet. We have made great strides forward, but we want to be sure to provide access to every student should we incur inclement weather days, the district stated. Remote instruction would be a challenge for all students on inclement weather days. If the district has more than 5 snow days, however, it will reevaluate how to make up instructional time. The College Community School District also is choosing to make up snow days in person rather than move to virtual instruction. If the district has an unusually high number of snow days, online learning will be considered only if the forecast is strong enough to make the cancellation the day before, so students can collect needed materials to learn from home, or if the snow day extends to more than one consecutive day. The Lynn Mar Community School District plans to give online learning a try if weather forecasts indicate early, the day before, that a snow day is coming. The district would alert staff and students that instead of attending class in person, they are expected to learn online that day and give them time to take any technology or other materials home with them. If the call for a snow day is a tough decision made that morning, Superintendent Shannon Bisgard said, it most likely will be a traditional snow day. It's hard for families to scramble on snow days already, and if you don't know what you're planning for, it makes it more difficult, Bisgard said in a school board meeting this week. Other school districts' snow day plans are more cut and dry. All snow day closings in the Iowa City Community School District automatically will become virtual learning days. Students there have been in either hybrid learning, learning in person, or online every other day, or continuous remote learning since school started in August. Now for the Iowa Today section, there are two articles. The first one is written by Lee Hermiston for the Gazette, North Liberty Plans for New City Hall. When the city of North Liberty bought land at Cherry and Main Streets, the plan was to build a civic campus at the heart of the growing city within 3 to 5 years. That was nearly a decade ago. But now, design work will begin for a new city hall at that site with the idea of moving in the next few years. The city has been operating out of leased space at Quail Creek Circle off Highway 965. Last month, the city council weighed buying and remodeling the current facility or building new. Building new won out, city administrator Ryan Herrar said. When we looked at the cost difference, we thought it made sense to get really what we need, even though it was going to cost a little extra, he said. Location was key. We really wanted to be in the original part of the city. According to city documents, remodeling the current location would cost about $6.2 million. A new building would cost an estimated $6.9 million. The city is leasing its offices for $210,000. North Liberty already is making use of the land bought for the civic campus. This past summer, the police department moved into a $5.7 million, 16,000 square foot new building on the site after operating out of a former farmhouse converted into dental office for 8 years. The new city hall would be east of the police department. Herrer said the police department was in a bad situation at its old location, but other city departments aren't yet dealing with those kinds of space issues. My goal is not to get any department in a situation like that, he said. Herrera said the city will decide whether to build a single-story building with a larger footprint that could later add a second story or build a two-story building with a smaller footprint. Design work by Shive Hattery is estimated to take about a year. With a new building, the city will have a blank canvas to design a safe and efficient workspace to house government officials, Herrera said. It also will bring the city's communications department, now operating out of the city's rec center, into City Hall, he said. When the Civic Center is completed, nearly all city offices will be located on Cherry and Front Streets, Herrera said. The fastest the building could go to bid would be December 2021 or January 2022, Harar said. From there, the city could break ground in spring 2022 and potentially be in the new facility by early summer 2023. An additional article in Iowa Today is Universities Appreciate Reynolds Budget Proposal. This is written by Vanessa Miller for the Gazette. The $15 million increase in state funding for Iowa's three public universities being proposed by Governor Kim Reynolds falls short of what the universities were hoping for, but the State Board of Regents is nonetheless appreciative. Regents had asked for $26 million in restorative and general education funding for both the 2022 and 2023 budget years, amounting to $52 million over the next 2 years. Reynolds, in her two-year budget plan released this week, is proposing a $15 million increase for fiscal 2022 and a $30 million increase in fiscal 2023 for a total bump of $45 million. The Board of Regents is appreciative of Governor Reynolds' continued support for Iowa's Regent Universities, Regents Executive Director Mark Brown said in a statement. The Iowa legislature, however, rarely adopts the governor's recommended Regents funding. Last year, for example, Reynolds suggested a $15 million increase, but lawmakers in the wake of COVID-19 delivered an $8 million cut. Acknowledging the legislative process has yet to unfold, Brown said, the board and university leaders will advocate for the level of financial resources necessary to continue to provide the accessible first-class education that our students deserve. The University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa have stressed the need for more state support, which has been waning. State funding levels for higher education remain significantly less than for year 2009 amounts, according to the board's appropriations request for fiscal 2022. Looking farther back, higher education appropriations for fiscal year 2021 are $63 million less than the fiscal year of 2001. Regents recently adopted a five-year tuition model promising annual rate hikes at the university in Iowa City and Iowa State by at least 3% and possibly more if lawmakers don't fully fund its requests. Regents paused that model this academic year, given the pandemic challenges for students and their families, but the model will resume next fall with the universities desperate for more resources. Should lawmakers get behind the Regents request and governor proposal to increase state support, the universities have committed to use the money on student financial aid, additional classroom supports for virtual and hybrid teaching, and making more classes and programs online capable. Some lawmakers are urging the universities, which moved a large number of courses online in the fall, to get back to in-person learning. I've talked to a lot of parents who are paying the tuition for their child or the child having to take out loans who aren't even given the opportunity to get the education that they expected from one of the Regent schools, Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, recently told reporters. That reflects somewhat poorly when, as legislators, we hear from students and parents that they want their student in person and they are not even being given that as an option. So there is some frustration that exists heading into this legislative session. And now for an article submitted by Kat Russell for the Gazette, titled Iowa Nears 300,000 Coronavirus Cases. State reports another 10 deaths on Wednesday. Iowa is nearing the $300,000 mark in COVID-19 cases as the virus continues to spread across the state and country. The state reported 1,841 new cases of the virus in the 24 hours ending at 11 a.m. Wednesday, bringing the state's total case count to 299,918 since last March, when the pandemic arrived in Iowa. The new cases were diagnosed in 5,259 tests for a one-day positivity rate of 35%. The state's seven-day average for positive cases is 1,484, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. Wednesday's new cases included 224 positive tests among children 17 and younger, and 3 cases among education workers. To date, 31,767 children and 7,684 education workers in Iowa have tested positive for the virus. As of Wednesday, 48 of Iowa's 99 counties were reporting 14-day positivity rates higher than 15%, according to a Gazette analysis of public health data. Linn County on Wednesday reported 77 new cases, with a 7-day average of new cases of 65. The county has had 17,465 cases since March. Johnson County reported 71 new cases with a 7-day average of 57. The county has had 11,818 cases since March. The number of virus patients being treated in Iowa hospitals decreased again on Wednesday from 552 to 516, the lowest number of hospitalizations reported since 501 on October 30th. The number of patients being treated in intensive care units also declined from 90 to 79, and the number of patients on ventilators to help them breathe held steady at 30. The state on Wednesday also reported 10 virus-related deaths, including 2 each in Polk and Scott counties. 2 of those who died were individuals over the age of 80, 7 were between the ages of 61 and 80, and 1 was between 41 and 60. On Wednesday, COVID-19 outbreaks, 3 or more cases among residents and staff, were reported at 84 long-term care facilities in Iowa, with 1,928 individuals testing positive. Northbrook Manor Care Center in Cedar Rapids is reporting 45 cases with 1 recovery. The Gardens of Cedar Rapids is reporting 21 cases with 1 recovery. In Johnson County, Briarwood Health Care Center reported 2 new cases for a total of 9, and Lantern Park Specialty Care reported 30 cases with 27 recoveries. The ABCM Rehabilitation Centers of Independence East Campus in Buchanan County reported 1 new case for a total of 34 with 32 recoveries. Now, moving on to the Insight page. The Gazette's editorial. Linn marijuana policy good, comma, not great. Linn County's new marijuana diversion program is an imperfect plan, but it's marked improvement over the status quo. Iowa is among a shrinking class of states that still threatens jail time for first-time marijuana possession offenses. It's a serious misdemeanor charge that can have lasting impacts on Iowans' ability to secure jobs, educational opportunities, and housing. At the same time, a slim but growing majority of Iowans support full marijuana legalization, and our neighboring states are moving quickly in that direction. Iowa's marijuana prohibition regime is unsustainable. The Linn County Attorney's Office last month announced that some first-time marijuana offenders will be diverted into a special program with no possibility of jail time. For offenders who complete drug treatment and community service, the charge can be dismissed and expunged. This marks important progress, but it has a couple notable problems. For one, it's not available to anyone with previous marijuana charges, nor anyone with a felony conviction. As racial justice advocates point out, those conditions disproportionately block people of color from the program. Additionally, the program relies on an outdated model of drug treatment, which considers adult marijuana use to be a disorder. It is the system that needs to be reformed, not the folks who smoke a joint every now and then. Perhaps this is the best prosecutors can do given Iowa's outdated prohibition laws. If anything, it underscores the need for local officials to advocate more forcefully to the legislature for more robust reform. Linn County becomes only the second county in Iowa to enact such a policy for adult marijuana users, following nearby Johnson County's lead from a decade ago. As Iowa's second largest county, Linn can be a model for other jurisdictions, hoping to modernize their law enforcement practices. It's a surprising about-face from early 2020, when Linn County Attorney Jerry Vander Sanden lambasted the Gazette editorial board for highlighting the gross racial disproportionality in Iowa's marijuana arrests. He wrote in a guest column that our editorial was a reprehensible attack on our police and a shameful play of the race card. Our community has a long way to go toward racial justice and sensible law enforcement, but Linn County's diversion program is a positive development despite its flaws. Now on to Todd Dorman. His article is titled, "This is the Thanks Public Schools Get." Governor Kim Reynolds lavished praise on Iowa's public schools during her Condition of the State address Tuesday night, using a string of anecdotes pointing to how districts have gone the extra mile to educate our kids during a deadly pandemic. Then the governor turned to her actual education plans. Reynolds and Republicans who control the legislature will fast-track legislation requiring Iowa schools to offer 100% in-person classes even as the pandemic continues. She called for the creation of education savings accounts, basically vouchers, likely allowing families to take tax dollars and use them to pay for private school or homeschooling. She said accounts are needed to rescue children, quote, trapped in a failing public school, unquote. Reynolds would require all districts to allow open enrollment out, likely scuttling diversity plans in five Iowa districts, West Liberty, Postville, Waterloo, Davenport, and Des Moines, that restrict higher-income families from leaving. She'd also make it easier to create public charter schools. If there's one thing the pandemic has taught us about education, it's that our parents need choice, Reynolds said, while insisting the state can still have a strong public school system. Details were not included. But the last time Republicans made a serious run at vouchers was in 2019. That plan provided annual vouchers to K-12 students equal to average per pupil state and to public schools nearly $7,000. The money could be used to pay for a non-public school or competent private instruction, also known as homeschooling. Families would reapply for grants each year. A 2017 version said vouchers could be used at schools with different accountability standards for testing, public reporting, and required classes, and the schools could not be required to admit all students. The bill barred the Department of Education from proposing any laws that would place an undue burden on private schools or homeschools. Estimated price tags ranged from $100 million to $200 million. So this is the thanks public schools get for tackling the challenges of educating students in difficult times. They get a governor who believes local officials aren't smart enough to decide how best to keep students and staff safe. Instead, we'll trust the maskless masterminds under the Golden Dome. Money that might have gone to help public schools and their students will instead go to private schools. Also, we'll reopen the White Flight Freeway. What's telling is the governor didn't say anything about how these steps will make education better in Iowa. She has no plans to improve public education. Instead, she's popping the escape hatch. In Florida, for example, 80% of vouchers are used to pay for religious education. In 2018, the Orlando Sentinel found some of the schools receiving vouchers taught distorted history and science lessons. This year, the paper found vouchers went to 83 schools that refuse to admit LGBTQ students and expel them if their orientation or gender identity is discovered. So maybe this is about choice, and maybe this is about creating an education slush fund for the governor's religious conservative allies. We'd all love to see the details soon. And now for two community letters that were submitted to today's paper. The first one is submitted by Richard Hillier of Cedar Rapids. Trump's speech was far from totally appropriate. I believe Donald Trump's assertion, his remarks were totally appropriate at last week's rally in Washington, just like I believe his phone call was perfect with the Ukrainian president last year. And that was submitted again by Rich Hillier of Cedar Rapids. The next letter is submitted by Julie Schultz of Marion. Man who entered the Senate can't justify terrorism. I had to shake my head at the comments and justification of the man who breached the Capitol on January 6th. He had no malicious intent, he joined others. This was from an article submitted by a Cedar Rapids man who prayed in the Senate on January 12th. He had no malicious intent. He joined others in prayer. Nevertheless, he went through barriers that the U.S. Capitol Police put in place to keep protesters out and went into the Senate chambers. He wants to justify why he was part of the group of terrorists who defiled our nation's capital and why he was involved in a protest where people died, where property was stolen and destroyed. I am sure that there was a lot of praying happening during the siege, especially by those who were scared that they might lose their lives. This man should do some soul searching and realize how his behavior negatively affected so many people. Unfortunately, his comments led us to believe this won't happen. Very sad and dangerous. And that was submitted by Julie Schultz of Marion. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, January 14th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Twyla Mae Hutchins, 89, of Marion, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, January 12th, at Promise House in Hiawatha, Iowa. Due to COVID-19, there will be a celebration of Twyla's life at a later date. Dennis Leroy Ellefson, 80, of Marion, Iowa, passed away of melanoma of the brain on Tuesday, January 5th, at Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House. Per his request, there will be no service. The family will hold a memorial at a later date. Marion J. Wacker, age 89, of Hiawatha, passed away peacefully on Monday, January 11th, at home, surrounded by her loving family. A service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, January 15th, at Tehan Funeral Home in Cedar Rapids. Friends may visit with the family at 12:30 p.m., burial at Cedar Memorial Cemetery. Gabriella Michelle Price McCormick, Gabby, known to her friends, was 25 years old. Gabby passed away on January 2nd from complications with COVID-19. Gabby attempted to be an organ donor. A celebration of life will be held on April 11th. More details will be provided once decided. Melanie Marie Gibson, age 50, years young, passed away peacefully January 6th at UIHC, where she fought a courageous and unfair battle with a rare and aggressive form of cancer that was diagnosed in December of 2020. During this fight, her family was at her side. Lansing Funeral Home is handling the arrangements. Online condolences may be sent to the family at their website, www.lensingfuneral.com. Daniel Howard Kimball, age 73, of New Caney, Texas, formerly of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, died January 9th in Houston, Texas. Graveside services at 2 p.m. Friday, January 15th, at Mount Calvary Cemetery, Cedar Rapids. Face coverings and social distancing is required. Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service, Cedar Rapids, is assisting the family. Dolores Catherine Nay Kalbantner Boelter, B-O-E-L-T-E-R, age 85, of Cedar Rapids, entered into eternal rest on January 12th with her family by her side. A public visitation will be held from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, January 14th, at the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. A private family funeral service and entombment will take place on Friday, January 15th. Mark McWilliams, 66, of Anamosa, died Saturday, January 9th, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice of Mercy House in Hiawatha, Iowa. Funeral services will be at noon Friday, January 15th at the Getch Funeral Home in Anamosa. Friends may call from 10 a.m. to the time of service. Here are other death notices. from Cedar Rapids. Fred Cornelius Patton, age 93, died Wednesday, January 13th. Cedar Memorial Funeral Home of Cedar Rapids is handling the arrangements. Iowa City, Lawrence Larry Kerf, 69, died Tuesday, January 12th. Gay and Chia Funeral and Cremation Service is handling the arrangements. Iowa City, Martha Leah Fulbright Roche, R-O-E-S-C-H, 97, died Tuesday, January 12th. Lansing Funeral and Cremation Service are handling the arrangements. Malcolm, Iowa. Randy Murty, 62, died Tuesday, January 12th. Closter Funeral Home of Brooklyn is handling the services, assisting the family. Montour, George Donald Biggs Jr., 42, died Tuesday, January 12th. Cruz Phillips Funeral Home of Tama, Toledo is assisting the family. In Olwine, Dolores E. Mia Schmidt, 88, died Wednesday, January 13th. Jameson Schmidt's Funeral Home of Olwine is handling the arrangements. And now on to sports. First, we'll take a look at the sideline. Iowa's in the NFL. Weeding, Hess signed reserve future deals. A pair of former Hawkeyes signed reserve futures contracts Monday. Tight end Nate Weeting signed with the New York Giants, and converted defensive lineman and current tight end Parker Hess signed with the Tennessee Titans. The contracts allow players to remain with the team through the entire offseason. Other players to previously sign a reserve futures contract: quarterback Nate Stanley with the Vikings, tight end Hakeem Butler with the Eagles, defensive end Matt Leo with the Eagles. Also, Cedric Lattimore was promoted from the Seattle Seahawks practice squad before the playoff game Saturday and finished with 6 tackles and 3rd most on the team. He also signed a reserve futures contract. College track and field. Iowa duo earn weekly Big Ten honors. Iowa City. Iowa freshman Genoa McIver was named the co-Big Ten track athlete of the week, and senior Jamal Britt was named the Big Ten field athlete of the week, the conference office announced Wednesday. Both athletes competed in the border battle against Minnesota last weekend. Britt won the long jump with a mark of 7.60 meters, that's 24 feet, 11 and 25 inches, the number one mark in the nation and the 8th best mark in school history. He matched that effort with a time of 7.85 seconds in the 60-meter hurdles, also the fastest time in the nation. McIver ran a time of 46.93 to win the 400 meters and secure the top time in the nation by nearly a whole second. And now for Iowa gymnastics. Hawkeye men's squad opens season January 30th. Iowa City. The Iowa men's gymnastics team will compete in a 6-meet regular season that includes 3 events at Carver Hawkeye Arena. Iowa opens its season at Minnesota on January 30th, while the home opener will be February 13th against Illinois. The Big Ten Championships will take place on April 3rd. Meanwhile, the 25th-ranked women's team was picked to finish 4th in the Big Ten Women's Gymnastics preseason poll released Wednesday. And then the final little piece says, looking for more? The Gazette's K.J. Pilcher is joined by former wrestling coach Dick Briggs and The Predicament's Wyatt Schultz for the Pinning Combination podcast. Then Cedar Rapids, Washington, Maquoketa Valley, West Branch, Cedar Rapids, Xavier, and Iowa City West sit atop top 5 in this week's Area Girls Basketball Super 10, compiled by the Gazette's Jeff Linder. Now to Iowa men's basketball. Iowa-Michigan State postponed. COVID-19 issues within Spartans program lead to Hawks' first missed game. This is written by Mike Hayes for the Gazette. Iowa's scheduled home men's basketball game against Michigan State tonight has been postponed because of COVID-19 issues within the Michigan State program. The makeup date will be announced at a later time. Michigan State head coach Tom Izzo announced Wednesday afternoon that players Mady Sissoko and Steven Izzo had tested positive for COVID-19. They are roommates. Sissoko is a freshman center, and Izzo, the son of the coach, is a walk-on sophomore guard. Tom Izzo said the two players tested positive 4 days ago. Last night, Michigan State announced an additional positive test had been received Wednesday afternoon. "I'm really disappointed," Tom Izzo said, "but it just goes to prove that this can affect anyone. I feel so comfortable that me, my son, and my players did everything possible and followed every protocol as best we could. I'm really, really impressed with the way they have conducted themselves. This virus does not discriminate, and I can't emphasize enough how important it is to wear a mask, wash your hands, and follow protocols." Tom Izzo tested positive for COVID-19 last month and quarantined for 2 weeks. The men's basketball programs of Nebraska and Penn State are currently paused because of COVID-19 issues. This is the first postponement of the season for Iowa, which is 11-2 and ranked 5th in the nation and in 2nd place in the Big Ten at 5-1. The Hawkeyes' next game is Sunday at Northwestern at 8 p.m., a game that was moved up a day by the Big Ten on Wednesday. And now on to Iowa women's basketball. This is a piece written by Jeff Linder. "All good things. Ohio State ends Iowa's 42-game Carver win streak." Iowa City. "After 1,081 days and a lot of fun times, it's over. Caitlin Clark's off-balance 25-footer at the overtime buzzer was off the mark, and 15th-ranked Ohio State snapped Iowa's 42-game home winning streak, 84-82, in a Big Ten women's basketball game Wednesday afternoon at Carver Hawkeye Arena. "This was definitely one we gave away," Clark said. "A lot can be learned from it." The Hawkeyes, 8-3 overall, 4-3 Big Ten, were a pedestrian 15 of 24 from the free throw line and committed 18 turnovers. The result was their first Carver defeat since January 28th of 2018, 92-74 against Nebraska. "I'm disappointed," Iowa coach Lisa Bluder said. "We had an opportunity to win. I feel we let a lot of people down, our fans and a lot of people who had played here." Iowa State, 7-0 and 3-0, rallied from a 14-point second-half deficit, then battled back from a 78-74 disadvantage in overtime. Iowa's Monica Cisnano fouled out with 2 minutes and 39 seconds left in extra time, and the Buckeyes capitalized. Madison Green's transition basket capped a 6-0 run for an 80-78 Ohio State edge with a 1 minute 58 seconds left. Clark got the Hawkeyes back even with 2 free throws, but J.C. Sheldon's runner put the Buckeyes in front for good with a 1 minute and 25 seconds to play. McKenna Warnock's drive got the Hawkeyes within 83-82 with 37 seconds left. After Green made 1 of 2 free throws, the Hawkeyes took possession with 18 seconds left. Ohio State coach Kevin McGuff knew our play, and they took away our back door, Clark said. That left us with a desperation 3 at the end. "You've got to get it up there and hope it goes in," but it didn't. The Hawkeyes led most of the game with the largest advantage of 46-32 shortly after intermission, but the Buckeyes rallied and took a 72-71 lead on a Gabby Hutchinson's three-pointer with 1.5 minutes left in regulation. Kate Martin's free throw tied it with 54 seconds left, and the Buckeyes threw it away with 34 ticks remaining. Clark missed a go-ahead opportunity, then Sheldon was short with her own try at the horn. "We shot too early," Bluter said. "We were fortunate to get out of regulation." Clark led the Hawkeyes with 27 points, including 13 in the first quarter. Warnock added 14 points and 12 rebounds, and Gabby Marshall tallied 10 points. Both teams struggled from the foul line. Ohio State was 10 of 20, but Iowa's turnovers were the difference. The Buckeyes scored 26 points off Iowa miscues. "It's hard to win games that way," Clark said. "We made some bad decisions on the press break." "We had a bunch of turnovers late in the game," Warnock said. "We need to learn how to relax in those situations." Bluter added, "We need to make the safe pass instead of the home run pass. We're trying to make home run plays a lot. You can make those at the end of the shot clock, but not all the time." Green paced Ohio State with 20 points. Sheldon and Braxton Miller added 18 apiece. Logan Cook and Tommy Taiwo appear to have climbed up the depth chart, and the Hawkeyes played some of their best ball when they were on the court. Cook played 19 minutes and scored 5 points. Taiwo logged 10 minutes, and the Hawkeyes were plus 16 in that span. Iowa hosts Purdue at 3:30 p.m. on Monday. And finally, there is an article written by K.J. Pilcher for the Gazette on high school wrestling notebook. Lisbon dominating after holiday break. Lisbon picked up right where it left off before the holiday break. The Lions resumed its dominant regular season, posting 4 decisive dual victories and capturing the team title at the Tripoli Invitational on Saturday by almost 100 points. They did all that without Hall of Fame coach Brad Smith, who rejoined the team Tuesday after contracting and recovering from COVID-19 in quarantine. The illness forced Smith to miss his first practice and competition in 43 years of coaching. Smith said he feels good despite some lingering fatigue as he works back to 100%. "I didn't have a real bad case, but I had a fever for almost 12 straight days," Smith said. "Finally, I got released Sunday and went back to practice on Monday." Lisbon assistants Dean Happel, Brian Hall, and Jeff Clark picked up the slack in Smith's absence. All three had wrestled for Smith, while Happel and Hall were both former Lions head coaches. They filled in admirably for Iowa's all-time coaching leader in dual victories and state championships. "I knew we were in pretty good hands," Smith said. "We didn't miss much, with me not being there, because they know what to expect and what we need to do. It makes my job that much easier." The Lions had blistered opponents since the calendar turned. Lisbon is 4-0 after the break, improving to 10-1 overall. They posted a 47-5 match record in those 4 duels. Lisbon tallied 245.5 points Saturday, crowning 7 champions out of 10 finalists, 11 of 13 wrestlers placed in the top 3, combining to go 37-8 the entire day. Brandon Pays, Quincy Hapel, top-ranked 145-pounder and 2-time state champion Robert Avila Jr., Max Cole, Truman Krobe, top-ranked Cole Clark at 220, and heavyweight Tony Baltz all won gold. Avila, Clark, and Baltz are all undefeated, while Hapel and Pays have just 1 loss. Lisbon has a Tri-Rivers Conference double duel Thursday against Starmont and host Albernett. The Lions will wrestle in Solon's Ed Haydenfeld Invitational on Saturday. The Iowa High School Athletic Association State Wrestling Tournament has not been finalized yet, According to a new release Tuesday, the Board of Control will vote to approve the format and schedule at its January 21st meeting. The news release also confirmed that the original schedule from February 17th through the 20th at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines remains in place. One of the other considered changes in a reduction in state duels teams, decreasing the field to 4 instead of 8 teams per class. The third Iowa Wrestling Coaches and Officials Association Girls State Tournament will be held January 22nd and 23rd at Extreme Arena in Coralville. The event was held at Waverly Shell Rock High School the previous two seasons. According to a Twitter post by Waverly Shell Rock coach Eric Whitcomb, 471 wrestlers were registered with 1 hour left before Wednesday's deadline. We have time to go back to the Insight page to read a Star Parker syndicated columnist piece called President Trump's Masada Moment. There seems to be only one area of common ground in our country today, agreement that something is wrong. But regarding what that something is and what we need to do, there is profound disagreement throughout the nation. The violence in which the sacred ground of our nation's Capitol building was violated by unruly hooligans, resulting in the death of 5, is a low point in our history. Clearly something is wrong, but we won't be able to fix it until we define it correctly. Those on the right are entirely correct that the tone of violence, chaos, and nihilism was set by the left. Our cities and institutions have been vandalized and looted with impunity by the Black Lives Matter and Antifa movements over the last several years, receiving support and endorsement by Democratic Party leaders and, sadly, many business leaders. After a violent mob pulled down a statue of Christopher Columbus in Baltimore, a journalist asked House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, "Shouldn't that be done by a commission or the city council, not a mob in the middle of the night throwing it into the harbor?" Pelosi's response, "People will do what they do." The point is that the answer to horrible behavior is not horrible behavior. It's the absolute secularization of the nation, the purge of the Almighty from our public life, the crowning politician's king of the universe that is destroying us. Our democratic republic, our freedom, is vital, but with no absolutes, it deteriorates to chaos. It is the Ten Commandments where we learn that murder and theft are forbidden. When life and property are turned over to politics, the result is the chaos we now see. The nation's high court, in many bad decisions over the last century, has undermined our Constitution as a limiting factor on federal government power. But the critical moment of detaching the nation as a free nation under God occurred in 1973 in the Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion. Then in 2015, in the Obergefell v. Hodges decision, government seized the authority to define and redefine the sacred institution of marriage. President Donald Trump had a successful presidency in his effort to make America great again. A powerful economy was restored and has sustained us. Our courts are now filled with principled conservative judges. The United States led the way to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and a new unbelievable peace has been achieved in the Middle East. President Donald Trump now has an opportunity to sign off on a powerful note. He cannot control Democrats' ability to politicize events and impeach him, but if they do it, he can take control by resigning. He can take the high, high ground in contrast to the low, low ground. He can take responsibility for the horror that just occurred at the Capitol because it occurred on his watch. He can turn the reins of leadership in these waning days to Vice President Mike Pence, an upright Christian man, an American patriot who could speak truth to the nation as the unruly Democratic mob takes charge and begins its long campaign to drag our nation into the abyss. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Thursday, January 14th. I'm your reader, Chris Klein. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.